Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast. This is the episode you guys have been waiting for all summer, the episode where the Chiefs sign a dusty veteran running back in order to murder the Clyde Edwards-Helaire and Ronald Jones bags. Pat, I think we assumed it was going to be McKinnon, honestly. The market was not assuming that. The market, like, I haven't even, I wish I could say I have this big Clyde Edwards-Helaire bag, because it honestly makes it kind of funnier if I have a huge Clyde Edwards-Helaire bag. But he got so expensive so quickly. I only have 12% Clyde Edwards-Helaire on Underdog because he got more expensive than I was willing to pay.
I'm happy to hear that, because I was like starting to get like obnoxious in my Clyde Edwards-Helaire fade stance. On Ship Chasing, we selected him in a draft with Leone, and I wouldn't shut up about it. I just felt like something like this was coming with CEH. I felt like it didn't really matter who it was, McKinnon, like James White.
No. It matters. Like, so for example, David Johnson is working out with the New Orleans Saints today. Had that been the Kansas City Chiefs, that would not have changed my perception. I think it being McKinnon very specific, and James White would have been bad too, but I think McKinnon very specifically is the worst because he's already done it in this offense. Right. Like he's already been, I mean, I believe this is true, that he played more snaps in the playoffs than Clyde Edwards-Helaire did.
I think that's true. And he was really good. I was actually confused that it took them so long to bring him back.
Yeah, because 2021 postseason for Jerick McKinnon, 10 for 61 and 6 for 81 in a touchdown against Pittsburgh, 10 for 24, but 5 for 54 as a receiver against Buffalo in that crazy game. Then against Cincinnati, 12 for 65, 3 targets, 30 yards. And in that Cincinnati game, this is a fun Lawton thinks. What do you think Clyde Edwards-Helaire's stat line was in that game against the Cincinnati Bengals?
I'm going to say 7 for 20.
6 carries, 36 yards, 1 catch for 4 yards.
I did him dirty on the yards per carry.
you were not very far off. So I actually think the best price running back in the Chiefs backfield when this all settles about a week from now, it's going to be Ronald Jones. It's got to be, because Rojo will drop about a round, but the McKinnon signing shouldn't really impact what Rojo's range was anyways, because he was never going to be playing third downs. I just don't, there was no scenario where he was playing third downs for Kansas City, I don't think.
I think it hurts Rojo a little bit, because I completely agree with that he wasn't ever going to be on third downs, but CEH isn't going to go away completely. So it's, you know, now if he's splitting early down work with CEH, I mean, I on this podcast, I described the potential situation as Ronald Jones is Ronald Jones. Jerick McKinnon is now Dario Gumbawale, but good. And CEH is Peyton Barber from those Buccaneer days. And I actually think like that's probably the best comparison, where like maybe Rojo has more of a goal line role than CEH. Whereas like back, for those who remember, Peyton Barber and Rojo were getting kind of platooned at the goal line as well. So that really hurt. But it still wasn't great to have like this split two down role. So I think it definitely creates more risk for Rojo. I mean, there's a chance, right?
Where it's just bad for all. It's just bad for all of them. I was thinking about sending this tweet, but I've been sending enough cope tweets today about a variety of things that I didn't. But like, there's just a scenario where the Chiefs have Travis Kelce with like 187 targets, and then 9 dudes with between 20 and 65 targets.
I definitely agree with you, but that feels pretty priced in as far as the wide receivers go. Like,
yeah.
This does feel like potentially like a once in a Mahomes level.
Oh, I don't think there will ever be a hierarchy of Chiefs ADPs this way, where the market is basically just throwing up their hands and saying, we don't really know. I mean, I think that, and I actually think they're being drafted in a bad order. I think MVS, based on these reports from like minicamps and stuff about him not just being the deep guy, I mean, I think he should be going ahead of Sky Moore.
I would recommend some skepticism on those reports. because we've seen that like every year from MVS. We heard that like nonstop last year. The Packers beats were like willing to like bet their jobs that MVS was going to be this like all around threat last year. Like that was like one of the biggest storylines out of Packers camp. And then he had like a 17-8 hot. He couldn't have been more of kind of the classic MVS role. So I would just like, we've heard this before. So I definitely think some skepticism is in order on that, but I do really like MVS at his cost. I think he's the best selection of the wide receivers at cost on the Chiefs. And I really like Sky Moore, but he's definitely gotten expensive.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to draft him, it's much better to draft him on DraftKings. You can legit get him in the 10th round on DraftKings. Whereas on Underdog with the Sickos and the Piss Boys, it's like 7th round.
I got Treylon Burks after Sky Moore in a draft yesterday.
Like, yeah, it doesn't work.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It's not great.
I don't know. I mean, I've been hammering Ronald Jones, which to no one's surprise. I do think I'll cool off. I'll wait for the discount.
Yeah, I have more Ronald Jones than Clyde Edwards-Helaire.
I haven't drafted Clyde Edwards-Helaire on Underdog once.
Well, not shocking.
Not once. I think I have him on DraftKings because I remember drafting him, but it must be on DraftKings or maybe an Underdog league that hasn't filled yet, that was a slow or that hasn't completed yet as a slow draft. But yeah.
It is what it is.
Where do you think CEH is fair value now?
In the, let's see here. Probably in the Rashad Penny, Damian Harris, I mean, I think there's a reasonable case to take Tony Pollard over him, probably.
I definitely want Pollard over CEH.
Yeah. So let's see at running back. So starting at running back 30, CPAT or CEH, Damian Harris, Kareem Hunt, Devin Singletary, James Cook. I mean, right around there.
Seems, yeah, that feels fine. About right.
But definitely after Miles Sanders, definitely after Kenneth Walker, and probably after Pollard. So running back 28, 29.
Yeah. And I don't think I'd be super psyched about him there, but that feels a lot more comfortable. Probably because I was kind of already assuming this was happening. So in my mind, like this, that's where he already should have been going. Obviously there was a chance they didn't bring anyone in, but
yeah,
he just felt so susceptible to that.
Yeah. So that's it's a lesson to be learned about drafting early. So we are in, This is a very unique thing to the NFL. It happens every June. We get these reports about guys playing in the slot, running backs being on the field at the same time. So I thought a fun version of this we're just going to play fact or fiction with this, because we have a couple of them coming out. So the first one is Tony Pollard. The Fort Worth Star Telegram's Clarence E. Hill believes Tony Pollard could see more playing time as a slot receiver in 2022. He only ran 10% of his pass routes from the slot last season. Fact or fiction, do we buy it?
I mean, probably fiction. I think fiction is going to be the answer to all of these for this slot stuff, except, well, maybe I think there's one that I might buy, but I would say like mostly fiction. I would hope that, you know, Pollard's seeing the field more at the expense of Zeke Elliott. I mean, that's what makes more sense. They can move on from Zeke after the year. Pollard is a free agent after the year. I mean, and Pollard's just way better than Zeke at this point. I think it just makes all the sense in the world that as the season goes on, you let Pollard, you know, have kind of more of like a 1A role in some games and see if that works. Because if it works, that would be helpful to know for 2023 planning purposes.
Yeah. So I think the reason why, if you were looking to buy on this, the reason why it might be true is Michael Gallup is not going to be back until week 5-ish, and Jalen Tolbert may or may not be ready, and James Washington may or may not be good. So it could happen just out of sheer desperation, right? Like if Tolbert is not who they thought he was, and James Washington seems to just be bad, I think you could see a little bit of this earlier in the season. But that is like total tail case. Like it does seem unlikely. But the reason to be betting on Pollard is pretty simple, which is just like Zeke looked like a guy who should not be playing professional football last year. So you can only really imagine how much worse it's going to be a year on is basically what it comes down to.
We can't rule it out, which is nice, but I think it makes it like, you know, this tiny little additional icing that you get with the Pollard bet. I mean, he did play, pulling up his career stats, he played 24% of his snaps in the slot as a rookie. So, you know, maybe there's a little bit more to this, but yeah, I think it just kind of makes the overall Pollard bet just a tiny bit more appealing. But really, it's that he, I mean, if he gets into like a 50-50 thing with Zeke, I mean, that alone is, he's already paying off his ADP, I think, just because he's been so explosive. It's going to be a good offense, and he's versatile. He can be used in the receiving game and as a kind of a big play runner.
Yeah. I mean, I'm in on Pollard at cost. I actually would probably be looking to buy him a little bit in Dynasty right now if you could get him for like what would project to be a mid-second, because – I mean, like, I don't know. I'm not going to read the tea leaves and be like, oh, he's going to sign with this team and be the smash or whatever. But there is a scenario where he has another good year here, looking way better than Zeke. And then the Buccaneers give him a boatload of money, or the Packers give him a boat. I'd be totally making it up if I knew a team, but just some team gives him a good running back contract as an unrestricted free agent.
I agree. I mean, I think you have the potential for him to be like a Chase Edmonds who we're excited about, you know? And we've like a Chase Edmonds who we're excited about was kind of Kenyon Drake that year where he went in the second round after flashing a lot for the Cardinals the year before and then slotted in as their starter. That didn't pay off, but in Dynasty, sometimes you're just like trying to get to that excitement level. You're allowed to flip him before you see if that works. And I think at worst, he's probably going to end up as one of, again, like another prime zero running back selection. You know, if he lands behind another starter somewhere, kind of lands into a committee, we're going to be happy to draft him, you know, probably round 10 or maybe even a little earlier.
Yep. Okay. Our next one, Saquon Barkley. SNY's Ralph Vacchiano reports that Saquon Barkley is lining up all over the formation in OTAs. Quote unquote, when the huddle breaks at Giants practice, there's no telling which direction Saquon Barkley will be headed anymore.
Oh man, I'm gonna buy this one a little bit. Yeah, I mean, we have this more pass heavy offense. Like, I guess they're kind of crowded. They're like weirdly crowded. One of these depth charts that doesn't like have anybody you're like super excited about, but enough guys where you feel like they should all be on the field, including like Darius Slayton. You know, like there's like depth on the Giants, but at the same time, I mean,
that's the biggest problem with this, because for Barkley to be lined up as a slot wide receiver, that would mean that Matt Breida would have to be subbing on over Galladay, Tony, or who's the third? Wandale, right? So it means that you're taking off a pretty talented wide receiver that you invested in to play Matt Breida, who's on like, I believe he was on Hayden Winks's making less than the guy who wins Best Ball Mania 3 article. I believe that is true.
I do love that as a fade stance.
Yeah.
Although as Best Ball Mania grows and grows, we might have to reassess. But I was thinking about that maybe a little bit differently though. Like, wouldn't those be empty backfield sets where you're splitting Saquon out? Like you have Saquon and then you like, you basically check to like a five, like an empty backfield five wide receiver set.
Teams just don't do that a lot. That, I mean, that's really the problem, is that it's fun to think about, but like a team running even like 10% of their plays out of empty is like unheard of. I know that from talking to our friend Keegan Abdu, who works for Sports Info Solutions. I had him look this stuff up, and we kind of did a podcast about it. And basically the answer is like no one, although the Bills under Daboll were one of the most aggressive teams with empty personnel.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think it'll be like a consistent thing, but I do think you'll see some of that. Like, I guess he's the sort of the fourth wide receiver. Maybe the tight end stays to block. I mean, that they don't really have much going in terms of a tight end. Might be Bellinger, who's their starter, potentially the rookie. Otherwise it's like Ricky Seals-Jones. So like, you know, if you're having that guy blocking and then Saquon like running out of the slot as a fourth wide receiver, that makes sense to me. But
right.
Yeah. I think more importantly, he'll just be used a lot in the passing game. And I've also just been thinking, like, you know, with Matt Breida, you know, Daboll saw Matt Breida. They kind of tried him out. They got a little excited about him for a second. And then they were like, actually, we'd rather play Devin Singletary on literally every snap. So I do wonder if Saquon could ultimately end up playing like 80% of the snaps this year.
I mean, he's like the same bet as CMC, right? Just like an injured guy who's been shitty, except you're getting a good price pick. I like taking Saquon where he goes. I think it's a pretty good price.
I agree. I mean, third round Saquon feels pretty good.
Yeah. So the other, I was digging for the blurb and I can't find it, but the other one that we got this report on was Alexander Mattison and Dalvin Cook, to which I buy absolutely zero. I think this has no chance of happening.
This is a zero one. Yeah.
Yeah.
I do like Dalvin Cook somewhat.
I'm snapping Dalvin because he goes after Derrick Henry, and Dalvin is so much more the profile of a guy that I prefer in fantasy.
Yeah, and I think you'll see more routes out of the backfield for them. So it's like not even the slot stuff, but just like Mike Zimmer didn't have like his running backs always running routes, his tight ends always running routes. Like they didn't have as many routes as a lot of other team on a given play. So I think you'll just like see Cook getting a chance to be an outlet more. Like the bar is so low coming from a Zimmer offense, you know, to this Rams style offense that I think will probably be somewhat balanced. Like it'll probably be like pass first, but not like pass heavy. Meaning Cook should probably have a pretty good workload, but also get used in the pass game. As long as he's healthy, still has enough left in the tank and doesn't have any suspension stuff going on, then he could definitely pay off ADP in a big way.
Speaking of which, we do have some other, you know, kind of big headlines to go through, some of which I actually think should be influencing people's draft strategy. The first one being this report from probably the most plugged in Ravens beat reporter, Jeff Zeribic, that J.K. Dobbins and Gus Edwards are going to be treated by guys who are coming back from severe lower body injuries, which the market has not assumed with J.K. Dobbins at all, in my opinion. And I love taking Dobbins because as Travis Etienne's price has increased, I think him and Dobbins are fairly similar bets, and Dobbins' price has not increased, but this is making me feel a little bit bearish on Dobbins.
Yeah, Etienne is shooting up. Fantasy Mojo had a tweet today.
Yeah, he had the tweet. Yeah.
Yeah. He's going, I think he said he saw him go in the second round because someone was, or maybe he was joking that you needed to take him in the second round because he now like consistently goes in the third. He's not falling to the fourth anymore. DraftKings, I've still gotten it. Like last week, I think I got him in the sixth or something. DraftKings is where all the values are. But I've been drafting Dobbins too. And Dobbins is not a guy that I normally take that kind of two down profile. You're betting on efficiency, split workload. It not usually that appealing, but he's so talented. I guess, I don't know, if this offers another discount on him, I think I'll take it. He's talented enough that it's like no one's coming for Dobbins's job. You know, like it's not like Eli Mitchell or something where maybe he's not even like in a 1A, maybe he's kind of a 1B type back by the end of the season. Or if he gets banged up and maybe he loses the job. I mean, he's a sixth round pick last year. Dobbins, I don't think there's any real chance of that happening to. And the other guys there are like Mike Davis, Tyler Beatty. So very safe in that regard. And then you also have him potentially down the stretch turning back into old J.K. Dobbins and, you know, all the money is at the end of these tournaments and everything in the final week. So I think I'll take any discount that this gives me on Dobbins because he was already going at a fairly appealing price.
Yeah. You and I both hate to see it. Tom Brady says that Russell Gage has to have a big year for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in 2022 on a 3-year, $30 million deal. Ugh, don't love it. Don't love to hear this because I've just been drafting Julio Jones under the assumption that he is going to be a Tampa Bay Buccaneer and also drafting Gronk like he is going to be a Tampa Bay Buccaneer.
I'm drafting Gronk like he's going to be a Buck for sure. I don't know that changes this. I mean, my assumption with the Gronk stuff is that he just doesn't want to be there right now. He wants to like live kind of a normal life and then Brady will kind of bring him up and be like, we need you now, and he'll show up.
He has said that. He has said he hates training camp before. Like, he is, like, on record as saying, like, I hate training camp.
He's also on record saying Brady tells him where to be and where what the plays are. And, like, he's basically – he's just Brady's buddy who plays tight end. Like, I'm not – I mean, maybe I'm overly optimistic on the Gronk stuff, but I've just been, like – I mean, Brady's, like, releasing social media videos where Gronk's, like, shagging fly balls for him. Like, I don't think he's going to abandon him this season in his final year as a quarterback. Gronk's going to be there, I think. But, I mean, Brady needs Russell Gage to play a big role, even if Gronk is there. Like, that
Because Godwin is maybe not good. I mean, there's been some very bearish stuff on Godwin ACL.
Yeah, and the Brown role as well. I mean, he needs kind of a guy he trusts out of the slot, you know, on some of those more intermediate routes. Mike Evans can be that guy to some extent, but that's not really his strength. And Brady also obviously just needs, like, more than, you know, one or two targets he trusts. I think the more that shrinks, Brady can get a bit exposed, you know. Brady's not going to, like, if he doesn't trust a guy, he's not throwing to him. Like, Tyler Johnson ran a ton of empty routes last year. You know, Scotty Miller runs a ton of empty routes.
Oh, so. I mean, they've had lots. I mean, the win sprinter list. Jalen Darden, Breshad Perriman. I mean, they have had a lot of win sprinters. I mean, they, for the entirety of Bruce Arians, this is even before Brady was there, they would have a second tight end playing like 40% of the snaps, you know, OJ Howard, Cam Brate. And these guys are not drawing any targets. They're just in there just to be out there, basically. Yeah.
Well, the original win sprinter is Chris Hogan from the
Bears. Oh my God. I forgot it. How could I forget about lacrosse superstar Chris Hogan?
That's where Rich Rebar coined this. So, you know, I do think that Brady's, like, because if he can't throw to Gage, you know, he's in a pretty tough spot where it's basically down to, like, Gronk and Evans is his only real options, and it's just a ton of Lenny dump offs, and I think the offense might really struggle. So it doesn't have me worried about Gronk and stuff, but I guess I was thinking Julio, like, to me, like, Julio's playing somewhere, and I don't have my heart set on anywhere, but it is feeling kind of Ertzy to me, where, like, he is now free. Julio is completely free. He's 17th, 18th round.
My biggest stands right now are taking the dusty guys who are not on teams. Fuller, Julio, Odell,
Gronk.
Gronk.
Me too, man. I am so overexposed to Julio, Fuller. Odell, I wasn't quite as on early, but now I'm taking pretty regularly. Gronk taking heavily. Yeah, all of them. I just feel like it's so predictable what's going to happen. Like, Julio signs with any team. I mean, I guess there's, like, maybe a couple options where people would be like, that's disgusting, I want no parts of it. But I think even then, like, if he lands with, I don't know, the Falcons or something really, which he wouldn't because, you know, bad blood and everything, but a Falcons S type situation, I think even then, where there's target opportunity, he's probably worth an 18th round pick. So it's just, like, hard for me to see how I completely eat it on this Julio thing. I say that, and then he's going to pull his hamstring in early September and miss.
Well, he's pulling his hamstring. It's just, you got to hope that he pulls his hamstring in a way that doesn't impact your playoff equity. Yeah.
That's true. That hamstring's getting pulled.
You know, it's weird with Gage. It's like I'm willing to admit that I've been wrong about him. Like, clearly he's a little bit better than I thought he was. I think he showed that last year. But he also falls in a really shitty range where I like all the wide receivers that go around him way more, because he goes in between Tony, MVS, Garrett Wilson, Claypool, and then it's like he's fine there. But then it's the Robert Woods, Michael Gallup, when you're trying to do the Dallas, Tennessee game stack. And it's like, well, do I really, I guess he's more expensive now. I did not realize he'd been steamed up to wide receiver 41, which I guess is appropriate. I guess I'm referring outdated in my head ADP, but it's like Brandon Ayuk or Russell Gage, you know, like, yeah, I kind of want Ayuk.
Yeah.
Yeah. What have you been doing? We'll get back to news items here in a second. We're now like 10 days into the backlash of the backlash of the backlash on the week 17 correlation stuff. What's your current headspace like on that right now?
My current headspace is that, like, I, so early on I was like, I'm definitely stacking week 17, and then I looked at some of Pete's teams and was like, I am not stacking week 17, as it turns out. And I got like a lot more aggressive about really stacking it. That's like where I still am. And I'm also like trying to think through, like last night I did, I believe it was a Kyler team. And then, but I started with Adams and then I got Waller and then I took Renfro and then I took Ayuk and I didn't take Carr. I took Kyler and I punted my RB2 because Carr's, I think, pretty expensive. I've actually been kind of thinking about this.
Very, like, very expensive, in my opinion. Like, I'd rather take Trevor Lawrence, like, three rounds later.
Yeah. So, I've been, like, thinking about, you know, how Leone had that one. I think maybe Leone and Wiggins did this in a qualifier where they, like, they took, like, super cheap Jalen Hurts 2 years ago. And they got, you know, you built, like, a game stack, but then you sub out a – you know, the quarterback for like a cheap rushing quarterback.
Oh, and yeah. That's like really good DFS game strategy is you build your Chiefs Broncos game stack, but you play $5,300 Daniel Jones instead of $7,900 Mahomes.
Yeah. So I've been like thinking like, why aren't we doing that more? Cause like, this is a DFS tournament.
That's a great point. I haven't gotten there yet either. I think that's a really intelligent point.
Cause we're almost like calling this the wrong thing. Like, this isn't really best ball. Right? Like, best ball gets you one quarter of the way there. You get through week 14.
Well, it gets you 75% of the way there. Cause let's like, I think this is what Josh Norris was rightfully, you know, pushing back on, which is like, you still are going to have decent player takes in summation, because you do have to beat out 11 other, well, what is it? 10 other teams. Cause if you finish top two, you qualify. So you you do have to beat out 10 other teams in cumulative over 14 weeks.
Right. But then you have to beat out, what is it? 2 of 18 to get in week 15. You have to be top 2 of 18 in 1 week. So that's a DFS tournament. It's a small field DFS tournament. That's the second quarter of the way there. Then the third quarter of the way there is you got to be first of 18. That's another small field DFS tournament. And then in week 17, which is, you know, we're talking about all the week 17 correlation and how important that is. That's like a medium field, medium to small, but what it's like 500 people, 400 and something. So you need to have a ton of upside that week compared to the other 2 weeks, but it's still a DFS tournament week. So like, that's what I'm saying. Like, the best ball thing is really like one quarter of it. The other rounds, even though they're 1 week each, you know, are the other three quarters. And
so
it's a DFS lineup.
So I don't think you're wrong in terms, in practice, right? So in the practice of let's just take cheap running quarterbacks instead of setting ourselves up with two expensive quarterbacks. But I do think that that is a strategy that will lead to bad win rates, which might, like, you know, maybe is not a deterrent for you, because maybe you are just so focused on like, if I get my one bullet in or my two bullets in or my five bullets into the 480 person final, I want those to be set up in such a way to maximize my EV. But I do wonder, especially because like a lot of people listening to this are just drafting $5 puppies, or maybe they'll do 10 teams in Best Ball Mania or whatever. I don't know if doing that is the best way. It's like the difference between constructing 150 max or doing like five teams in the slant. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I actually don't think that you should take two cheap quarterbacks or three cheap quarterbacks. Like, I think, because that might be, if you were advancing to a week 17 final that had like 4,000 people in it, then maybe that would make sense, where you're like, I need a monster team. Like, I need to be getting like, I need like Malik Willis, you know, in the back half to be like the quarterback you need, you know, and that everyone's jamming in DFS, and I've got him, you know, so I've got my elite quarterback upside, but then I've also got all these early round picks and this team's a monster. But like, the odds of that actually happening and that team advancing are low. Like, you're probably shooting for the moon when you don't need to. But I've been like kind of doing, I'm working on an article as well that's driving some of this research, but I've been like thinking about, you know, maybe trying to really push the quarterback too. So if I've got Kyler, I've got Lamar, Hurts, you know, I've got someone that is probably starting for me most weeks, and that quarterback too, I probably only need them for, you know, bye weeks, and, you know, maybe they have enough upside. Like if I get a Mariota, something like that, maybe they have enough upside to actually slot in some weeks. If he holds the job, maybe he slots in for one of those playoff weeks because he's got the rushing profile or at least upside. And that opportunity cost of like a Carr or, you know, even like a Kirk Cousins is pretty high. You know, those are fairly valuable picks for like the type of upside that you're going to need to take down week 17.
I think you're very right about that. And I think that's like a susceptibility or an inefficiency in the market right now is the really stable but non-true upside quarterbacks cost a little bit too much right now. So I would, and I would even include Rodgers in that tier. I would say mm-hmm. like the tier from Rodgers, Carr, Cousins, Tua, probably I would, even though Tua actually goes after Fields, it's very slight. I would say like those guys all seem a little bit over, and maybe even Stafford, to be honest. I feel like Stafford's ADP is such an example of how week 17 is being priced into the ADP. I saw someone making this point about, I think it was Connor, Drico. I think he was making this point about Mike Williams, about how, because you're starting at two, you're taking Cup, and then you want to take Keenan Allen and Mike Williams. So Mike Williams' ADP has really been pushed up by mm-hmm. the week 17 correlators. I do wonder if that same thing is happening right now with Matt Stafford, but specifically Carr, Cousins, and Tua all seem like I'm just drafting this for safety right now. I'm drafting because I just want to get my 17.5 points per game and know that's happening regardless. Whereas Daniel Jones, Zach Wilson, Jared Goff, and then all the rookies, right? Pickett, Ritter, Willis, Corral, all those guys, because they run a little bit, do seem like they're actually being discounted.
They are being discounted. And when you look at like what's available in weeks or in round 17 and 18,
it's like nothing. Yeah.
It's like total nothing.
Total guesses.
It's nothing. And starting quarterbacks like Jared Goff, you know,
Matt Ryan,
Carson Wentz, you can take a stab on those rookies, which I kind of
like. Like you would not fall over with shock if Matt Ryan scored more fantasy points than Derek Carr this year. It would be an upset for sure, but it wouldn't be insane.
It wouldn't be insane. And you get to take Matt Ryan plus the running back, wide receiver, tight end that you selected instead of Carr or instead of Cousins or instead of, you know, any one of these guys. You know, and then, you know, the difference between that, what that guy scores your week 17, 18 guy, and also the chance of what that guy does in week 17, you know, like what are the odds? Like if you were putting together a DFS lineup for weeks 15, 16 or 17, you know, how much more excited would you be? How much more salary would you pay for that type of receiver that you're getting like in like the 9th, 10th round compared to a 17th, 18th round receiver? I think it's like a pretty big difference in a lot of cases.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. So let's get back to the news stuff a little bit. I think that point is you should think about things like that, like the 2v2s, like what you're giving up versus what you're getting, and that getting a passable 17 game starting quarterback out of your round 16, 17, 18 pick versus the type of skill position player you'd be getting there. Like we might like skill position players. They're like, oh, kind of like taking Devin Duvernay, kind of like taking Wandale Robinson, whatever. But those guys are, especially drafting early, right? Before training camp, before injuries and stuff, like those guys are, and we just don't have a clue on a lot of these depth charts right now. Like we're just kind of guessing with these later round picks, whereas we're not guessing that Matt Ryan or Zach Wilson or Jameis Winston are starting for their teams. So getting back to the news a little bit, Terry McLaurin not reporting to minicamp, unlikely to show for minicamp, far part on contract extension talks. What do we see happen here, in your opinion?
I wonder if we see him get to a range where I'm actually comfortable drafting him.
Yeah, because right now I'm not.
I'm not at all. in stuff like this, I find actually a little disappointing. Where like maybe, you know, obviously if he's cheaper and he does pay off his ADP, like it makes it so much easier for him to pay off his ADP if I'm wrong about kind of his general season. So with someone like McLaurin, I was kind of out on, I would like him to stay expensive. It does make me feel a little bit better about the Dotson that I've grabbed. Dotson, not a guy I liked as a prospect, but kind of the Amon-Ra lesson of last year, like at a certain point, you know, maybe ignore some red flags. Amon-Ra, kind of the opposite, actually, like early day three guy, productive, early declare. Dotson was decently productive, especially in his final two seasons. He was quite productive, but not very efficient as an underclassman. Comes out after 4 years, but got that first-round draft capital. So, you know, doesn't have everything, but has some things. He's fallen in a range where I do take him. Like, you're looking at him versus Tolbert unstacked. I've just been scooping dots, and I like that he's that cheap. But maybe that discount goes away now.
Yeah. They have a gross – Norris, if you're listening to this, turn it off. They have a really gross Week 17 game is the issue. We're staring down the barrel of them playing in Week 17 in a 41 total against Jacoby Brissett.
Well, yeah, I guess – so if you want to kind of bet that Watson doesn't get suspended the full season, it does make me I hate taking Watson. Sometimes he's gone so late that I've taken
the market him, but... The market is really going the other way. He's like persona non grata in the market right now. All Browns players other than Chubb and Hunt are falling a lot.
Yeah. It's also one of those things where like I get to a point I'm like, do I want to take down this tournament with Deshaun Watson?
Right. It's like worst case scenario is you get to win $2 million, but you have to be sitting there like rooting for Deshaun Watson. You're like, great.
And you have to like go on the shows and then people are like, so like what propelled you to victory here?
And you were like, yeah, you know, I just really played the markets and I bet on this sexual predator being able to play more games. It was really brilliant.
Sexual predator was underpriced.
Yeah. It's terrible.
Yeah, I've taken him though, as he's fallen super, super cheap. But if you want to bet on that without feeling as gross, you know, the Washington passing game, you know, with them maybe getting pushed on the other side, because he's only suspended 8 games or 10 games or whatever. So, that game's not nearly as gross if Watson's there.
Yeah. You know, it is kind of interesting though. Like we've had this whole season of, you know, wide receiver craziness and stuff. And I am sure that McLaurin and his representation are sitting there saying, like, what are my numbers going to look like after a year playing with fucking Carson Wentz? Like, probably not as good. And you just spent a first round pick on a wide receiver. It's a very good spot for him to get his money right here.
It is. It's a shame these guys don't really have any leverage, you know? He can't really – the old holdout game, like the Chris Johnson holdout, I think is pretty much done. So my guess is he ends up playing.
I don't even know like what is his recourse if he does hold out, like what even happens? Like he just gets a bunch of money and just accrues no service time and just gets it sucks for him basically.
I guess he shows up for whatever limited number of games you need to accrue a year towards free agency.
Which I'm not sure how many games that is. Which used to be, I remember this from Vincent Jackson's holdout for the Chargers. He did it. He said, I'll sit out the first 9 games and accrue my year of service time, but you guys aren't going to get me for the first 9 games.
Yeah, that'd be kind of interesting. So one thing, this is this popped into my head. I wanted to make sure to ask you about. So one like kind of harebrained stack idea. Right. Is like, I don't love the Eagles game. I guess the gross game thing made me think of another gross game in the Eagles Saints. And
except that game could be that game has tails to being really good, where the Saints are a team that are super sensitive to scoreline effects, where if they get down 10 points, they let Jameis do his thing. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but I'm saying if I'm pondering the multiverse of things that could happen in the NFL season, Jameis cooking down 10 points could be one of them.
It could be one of them. Well, that's actually kind of where I said it. It's like, I kind of like playing it more from the Saints side. Then you get like your bring backs on the Eagles. Obviously I like drafting Hurts. But I also want kind of come to mind, like if I'm doing some of these game stacks without the quarterback, if you don't get Hurts, you can still then stack up the Saints side. And then the galaxy brain move is once you stack,
give it to me, give it to me.
You get your Eagles bring back, tack on Taysom Hill,
tack on Taysom Hill. Oh dude, Drew and Mike hate this so much. I mean, they are just murdering me in Slack. Like, this is the dumbest opinion. How could you have this? It's like he's 1% to start in the week you need him. He might not even be good in the week that you need him. And I'm like, dude, I don't care. He can actually break the game. Like, if Taysom starts 8 games at quarterback, he breaks this game, because he's averaging like a shitty Taysom start is like 14 half point PPR points.
Yeah. And if you have Taysom double stacks, I mean, come on. Who's taking you down then?
If you have Taysom stacked with Michael Thomas and Chris Olave and you have the Devonta Smith bring back, dude.
It's so nice. Yeah, Smith is kind of the bring back of choice, because you can't get him as easily with Hurts. You're in kind of the situation where you have to like make a decision on one of them.
One of them has to fall after ADP, and you have to take them on the turn is how that has to work, yeah. Basically.
I've tried to do this and it didn't work because Taysom got sniped. I mean, getting sniped on Taysom Hill, it was so tilting, but I had Olave and Landry with Gainwell on the other side. So, which I feel fine about just on its own. That would have been fun.
That's a good one. You know, I think that, again, the week 17 deniers have made the point that, like, it doesn't make sense to just take any given running back in a game stack. Like, Derrick Henry probably doesn't actually correlate that well with Michael Gallup and Jalen Tolbert, because if Derrick Henry is losing his mind, he probably has just demolished the Dallas Cowboys, right? And if the Titans are down 10 points, Henry's dust. Like, he's dusted. So I kind of like the idea of, like, Tyreek, Tua, and James White. You know what I mean? Kenyon Drake, Trey Lance, and Brandon Ayuk, or whatever, like those types of correlations.
Yeah, for sure. And like that Raiders one that I talked about, I tripled the Raiders with Ayuk coming back. I thought about Tyrion Davis Price adding that, and I was like, Tyrion Davis Price is like this 2-down guy. Like, maybe it's just a super high scoring game, but like that's not really,
yeah, right.
That's probably not correlated with all these other guys. So I didn't take him.
Yeah. Let's see. Sports Illustrated's Daniel Flick believes, like, it seems a matter of when, not if, Desmond Ridder gets to start. I'd file this one under the category of very obvious, because what are the Falcons doing starting Marcus Mariota for 17 games? Like, there's no point. It's like Mariota has maybe now entered a new phase of his career where he's actually the new Tyrod Taylor, where he starts 4 games a year. He starts 4 games a year for whatever team just drafted a first-round quarterback and doesn't want to put him in the fire right away.
I do think there's some upside with Mariota. I took him over Pickett on that team. I was telling you about, like, you know, punting the quarterback too. Maybe I should have taken Pickett, but my thought process was like, you know, at least with Mariota, if I'm sorry, I don't know if you can hear this. This hose is going off.
So, I mean, I don't know. Ridder ran a 4.5 at the combine. Like, I don't know. He could run. They play the Cardinals in week 17. He could run around. He could be fun.
He could be fun. I just didn't like Ridder much as a prospect. So that's a bias for me. You know, he's like, he didn't scramble a ton. Kevin Cole had some good stuff on, you know, that being important for real life, but also like obviously for fantasy. If the guy is fast, but he's not looking to create with his legs, that's not ideal. But yeah, he's kind of Alex Smithy to me. He feels like so conservative. But one thing I was thinking about is like, if I'm betting on the Cardinals, like let's say you're stacking up the Cardinals Falcons and you don't have Murray.
Yeah.
You're kind of betting that the Cardinals are frisky. So maybe it's because Ridder's good, but it could also
betting the Falcons are frisky.
Sorry. Yeah. The Falcons are frisky. Yeah. Cause if the Cardinals are just rolling the Falcons, like, do you need bring backs? So if you're stacking both sides, it's helpful that maybe Ridder, but I think also maybe Mariota is actually okay. And they're kind of like Texans-y, where they, you know, we think they're going to be this abomination and they're only bad.
I mean, there are paths to the Falcons being only kind of bad. Well, I don't know anything about their offensive line. I assume it's probably bad. Quite bad, but
it's bad and the defense is very bad.
London, Patterson, Pitts. I mean, that is and after those three guys, it drops off a cliff, so they can't sustain any injuries. Like if 30-year-old Cordarrelle Patterson is like nursing a hamstring injury, it's like it's so done for them, because then they're bringing in like Brian Edwards and Olamide Zaccheaus. It's like really done for them.
Yeah. Auden Tate. I think Demir Bird's on that team.
Dude, this is the dark part of the offseason where you're like, yeah, the Falcons could be frisky.
I know it is the darkest part. And then you get to like week three and you're like, what was wrong with my brain?
You go back and look at some of these teams and you're like, I was drafting Drake London when Kyle Pitts was a third round pick. He's got four catches through 3 weeks. What have I done?
It's so true, man. It's so true. Like in retrospect last year, it's like, obviously the Jaguars and the Jets are going to be terrible. You know, these teams are so predictable.
Excited. We were so excited. But I mean, I'm doing it with the Jets again. I'm just jamming these Jets players.
I'm jamming up too. And I like, then the worst part of the Jets one is that then it gets you on the Seahawks. You're like, I got my Seahawks bring backs. Could be the two worst teams in the league.
I'm not doing that with the Seahawks. I'm just out. I don't care. I mean, Metcalf, if he got a round cheaper, I'd be in. But Lockett.
Lockett's so cheap. Like,
But Lockett was so reliant on Russell Wilson, I think, in my opinion.
I mean, I think everyone was. Like, Metcalf scored touchdowns while Wilson was out, and so he's not getting treated like he was relying on him in the same way as Lockett. But I think he was, you know? I know Metcalf's, like, a bigger dude you can kind of throw the ball up to and stuff, but – and I think he's better than Lockett. But, like, there's a gigantic gap between their ADPs. If Lockett's ADP is right, then Metcalf is going to be a disaster.
All right. I got a Jimmy G update for you here. ESPN's Dan Graziano talked to several NFL executives and writes that the majority of people to whom I spoke believe both Baker and Jimmy are not going to be traded, but just outright released.
Yeah. I mean, Trey Lance is starting for this team. Like it's been obvious that that's happening, I think. So I don't know. Nothing has changed. I assume you're targeting Lance and have been.
Well, I think the bigger thing is does Baker and Jimmy go to a situation where they improve the offensive outlook?
I mean, so those teams would be the Panthers and the Seahawks. And I think you have to say yes.
Correct. Which is like, yeah, I mean, Jimmy Garoppolo makes, I'd be smashing the button on DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett and Noah Fant. If Jimmy is not I don't think he's this great real life quarterback, but he's like the Alex Smith of like, he makes enough guys in his offense viable. He can execute the game plan, but just makes a lot of mistakes that are not really that impactful for fantasy football, the types of mistakes he makes.
Yeah, he's like the fantasy poor man's Jameis Winston or something. Like, he does make mistakes.
I think he's more like Alex Smith.
He's more like Alex Smith, but in those mistakes types of way. Like, he throws that interception that's like a back-breaking real-life interception.
Like,
but
it's back-breaking, like, yeah.
Yeah, but it's like, who cares for fantasy? You know, he's delivered efficiently up to that point. But he, I think, would be awesome for Lockett, right? Like, he's more of that timing throw over the middle guy.
Yes. I think he would be good for Lockett. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like Baker would probably be better for DK. Maybe. I don't know. What's Baker good at?
I mean, Baker, he's fine. Baker is fine, dude.
I guess stylistically, is he better for Lockett or DK? I don't know.
The rewriting on the narrative of Baker has been bad. I think he is a fine NFL quarterback. He played through injury last year, and Odell, you know, immediately leaving Cleveland and turning into, you know, capital O Odell was also problematic for him.
It was a bad sign. No, I think Baker's better than Jimmy. Like, if I had my choice, I'd take Baker.
Yeah, I think that's true.
I mean, he played through a ton of injuries last year. So I agree that in general, people are like to kind of write him off is harsh, but he's got, I think, a lower floor than Jimmy and a higher ceiling.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's true. Pumping my bags alert, NJ.com's Daryl Slater reports Wandale Robinson could have a significant role in the Giants offense, perhaps even as a gadget player, after accounting for 45% of Kentucky's receiving yards in 2021.
It is wild. Like I've gone back and like looked up his yardage share numbers like three times.
It seems like you look at like his size and his combine stuff and you're like, there's no way.
Yeah. I'm like, I have a typo here. I've done that like three times. I'm like, no, he's I think 35% career yardage share, which is off the charts for a 3-year player. I mean, he came out early. He was
recruited as a running back. He didn't even really start playing wide receiver till he was already at Nebraska.
That's nuts.
Yeah.
Where are you at? Like, are you in on Tony still? Giants thing, like, we're wrong about somebody, but there's also a lot of upside.
Well, it's Galladay. Galladay is the one who's most likely to just be done.
Right. But they're talking about him as, like, the clear number one guy.
Well, he should be. He's making clear wide receiver one money. He was very good as a Lion. Like, people, you know, they do this post-facto rewriting of history where everyone, like, was universally saying the Galladay signing was bad, and they weren't. It was, I don't think people were saying this is like the steal of the century, but there was not a ton of like, LMAO, Gettleman doesn't know what he's doing. Right. Like people were relatively on board with it. It's just, it was really funny that he scored zero touchdowns.
I think they were, yeah. Pretty quickly, it was like, this is a bad fit for Galladay.
It was a bad fit. And I don't think adding Daboll to this offense, like miraculously makes it a good fit. Like Galladay is like kind of needs some accuracy. He needed fucking Matthew Stafford, and Daniel Jones is not Matthew Stafford. You know, he's just not.
Yeah. Yeah. He's like the exact opposite. And I agree with you on Daboll. I mean, like, even if he's able to like transform Daniel Jones into, you know, like a star, which I don't think there's any chance of, but let's say that happens.
I see it being best for Tony. Because Tony is the most Diggs. He's the most like Diggs.
Right. But I would also say like that process will take like 3 years probably. You know what I mean? Like even if he is able to turn around Daniel Jones, Daniel Jones is worse than Josh Allen was like as a rookie.
I don't know about that. I think that is a little bit of rewriting history. Rookie year Josh Allen was really bad.
All right, maybe like, sophomore year?
Daniel Jones is worse than sophomore year. Okay. All right. Yeah. Yes.
I'll take that. But, I mean, you know, it's a couple years away from him, I think, being any good at all, even if Daboll's able to salvage him.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that is unreasonable. It's just like... The Daboll thing also, by the way, like while we're talking about things that are like so obvious, we got it wrong. That might be one of the things where we're like, we seriously did this. Like we just drafted all these Giants players and Daniel Jones sucked for the fifth year in a row. Like who was wrong here? Was the bet wrong or were we just wrong the whole time? Like it might just be very clear that we were wrong the entire time.
Yeah. I think I want to remember this thought now, because I feel like it's going to get like knocked down by all this, you know, all this chaos, but like the most likely scenario with Brian Daboll's hiring is that Daniel Jones continues to suck. And then they bring in a new quarterback who has some rookie struggles, but then eventually becomes good in a pass first offense that sets up quarterbacks for success. Like, cause don't you think like once, let's say Daniel Jones sucks, as is the most likely scenario, then doesn't the next year Giants offense become undervalued because we're like, oh, Daboll, we did it again. Like we put too much emphasis on the coach. Coach doesn't matter. It's all about the players, you know, and we don't give the Giants credit for having, you know, a pass first intelligent play caller.
Yeah. I mean, it would be sort of interesting if like, okay, they suck. think it just doesn't work out. Saquon gets hurt. Daniel Jones is fumbling a million times. You know, Tony is either, you know, attitudinally not available, like the team just decides he's an asshole, or he gets hurt. And then all of a sudden we're sitting there in week five, or let's say week nine, let's give him that. And their three wide receiver set is Darius Slayton, Keelan Cole, and a grumpy Kenny Galladay. And Matt
Breida.
Keelan
Cole is on the Raiders, I think.
Keelan Doss is the one who signed with the Giants. And then, you know, Daniel Ballinger is the tight end, and Matt Breida is in at running back. And we're like, yeah, these guys suck. And we were like, but it might lead to a discount next year, right? So they sign some quarterback in free agency who's actually good, or they draft a guy, and then all of a sudden we're getting a discount on them next season.
Yes. Yeah, I don't want to lose sight of that discount once I eat it real hard on my Giants bags this year, which is probably going to happen.
Yeah. Weird report, unexpected. I mean, Michael Thomas is still not back from this ankle injury. It's been 2 years.
Yeah, I was actually thinking about that this morning, because it's like, on the one hand, the narrative has shifted where, like, last year it was clear – like, he got surgery so late in the summer that it, like, impacted his entire season. And the team was really pissed off that he did it that way. You know, he should have gotten surgery. Isn't that like the Shaq thing where he's basically like, I'm not going to recover on my time, I'm going to recover on your time?
Yeah.
It's like kind of what Michael Thomas did. It was like a lot of bad blood. But they've figured that part out. And so now, like, the coaches are – they're like – defending him, like he's doing everything he needs to do. You know, they seem like optimistic or whatever about his rehab process, but it's still crazy that it's taken this long. It Hakeem Nicks is starting to come to mind, even like Kenny.
Oh, I cannot believe you invoked the name of Hakeem Nicks. Some of my biggest bag losses on Hakeem Nicks.
It's worrying. Like when a guy's like, what are we realistically expecting when Michael Thomas takes the field again? It was 2019 that he was incredible. He wasn't that great in 2020. He was dealing with this injury, but I don't know, man. It's like, it's making me a little nauseous.
I have not been able to get myself to draft Michael Thomas all that often. So where Michael Thomas goes, he's again in kind of a weird range, like Amon-Ra St. Brown or Michael Thomas. Like, I don't know. Michael Thomas's median might be better, but Amon-Ra St. Brown is like catnip to me. Like, a team that might be better, plays in a dome, he's young, he exploded. Like, he just exploded to end his rookie
skill
year.
Set matches perfectly with his quarterback.
All that stuff. I mean, Devonta Smith, same thing. It's like, I just really want to be drafting a lot of Eagles. And then not that interested in Thielen or Hopkins, pretty much only in game stacks. But then Treylon Burks, Brandon Ayuk. So then it's to the point of like, I end up taking, it's kind of funny because I think we talked about this maybe a month ago where like, I just wasn't drafting any Dallas players because I thought the prices were all weird, but I was like, shit, I don't want to get to the playoffs and not have a bunch of Dallas. So I've been taking Schultz a lot, which is funny because I don't like Dalton Schultz. Like, I think he's just a guy. He might hold out. Like, this could be like an all-time Gary Barnidge situation with Dalton Schultz. But look,
there's
where he
so
goes.
Many Gary Barnages in the history.
Look where
of the
he goes. So he goes next to Michael Thomas, who we don't really like. Eli Mitchell, who I kind of like, but I don't want to take a ton of him because that situation could end up so bad. Adam Thielen, he's like a million years old. AJ Dillon feels overpriced. Hopkins is like, I think, impossible to draft unless you're setting up the game stack. Burks, who I like. CH, who we've just decided is undraftable. And then Russell Wilson and Tom Brady. But if you already have a quarterback, you're not taking Russell Wilson or Tom Brady. Like, if you've already taken a Mahomes, a Burrow, an Allen, whatever, you're not taking those guys. So he ends up in a range where I'm like, I can't really set up any stack here, or I'm not closing out a stack here. So I'm just going to take Dalton Schultz and set up the Dallas Tennessee stack.
Yeah. And that's a nice mini because you can get Burks and the Dallas stuff. You can also tack on, like, if you get Schultz, you can get Tolbert easily. You can get Gallup easily. So I'm with you there. The one for me that has been kind of like the early leak that I am trying now to correct is not getting enough LA. That LA bowl could be pretty nice in week 17. And I just don't like the prices. And I don't
it's impossible. It's like you have to get a certain draft slot and you have to get lucky. Like to start your draft, I actually just did this on DraftKings this morning. It's a little bit easier on DraftKings, but I did Eckler, Keenan, Mike Williams, Justin Herbert, but then I got sniped on Allen Robinson. So then it's like, what did I just do all that for? What did I just spend four rounds doing? So then I got to bring it back with Tyler Higbee and Odell and hope that Odell signs with the Rams.
And Van, you could always tack on Van Jefferson.
Yeah, I don't know. feels like they might try to play Tutu Atwell over him.
Tutu and I think Josh Palmer, I more expensive, but I feel a lot better about drafting him. Josh Palmer feels like maybe the way to get there to me, because you get to bet against Jalen Guyton, who is just bad. And Palmer was more of a Keenan Allen handcuff last year than challenging Guyton. But like Guyton,
he's so bad.
He's so bad. And he played last season in a role that was a holdover from the previous offense. So this is only his first year.
This is a really good point of that role having a potential switch in the offense and Mike Williams taking over more of the deep stuff.
Right. Like I think we feel like his role is more entrenched than it is, because we've seen it basically exactly the same for 2 years, but it's really just 1 year with this coaching staff. And man, you have to think that, you know, Josh Palmer, who was basically exclusively a deep threat in college, would get used more like that and just makes more sense to be on the field and through our receiver sets than Guyton. And yeah, Mike Williams can challenge downfield more. So yeah, if Palmer's on the field, like if he's a starter, he's such a smash at his ADP, if this offense is what we're hoping. So he's been a kind of a way for me to get more exposure to that game.
Gerald Everett, buddy.
Gerald Everett. Yeah. Although Everett go together.
Higbee and Everett are both quite cheap.
They're cheap, but they go like right next to each other. So you can't, not that you necessarily want both of them. Anyway,
you just got to take Taysom.
Akers, I haven't taken a ton of. I did on a team.
Oh, dude, how have we gotten an hour into this and we're not just pounding the button on Daryl Henderson, who doesn't even have to deal with Kyren Williams? Now, Kyren Williams has suffered what happens to every time the Rams draft a running back, which is they immediately get hurt. So Kyren Williams now is a broken foot. I don't think we'll see him for a long time. D'Hendo is just going to be, he's such a good pick. We just saw him do it. He just did it. We just watched him do it.
Yeah. I'm actually surprised that it didn't pop to mind for me. I've been taking him too. Yeah. And I've been taking, that's one of those things where I was taking a lot of Algier, who goes right next to him, but then I've switched over and I'm taking a lot of Henderson now, just because I'm like, I want exposure to the Rams more than the Falcons. Like, so yeah, I like him a lot as a pick. But it does make me worry a little bit, like, okay, I'm going to have exposure to the wide receiver 3 or 4, then like the wide receiver 4 or 5 on the Rams side, and then like the running back 2. Like, it's tough to not be able to get exposure to the actual playmakers all together in this potential shootout. Like, in LA, two up-tempo offenses, two really potent offenses, two condensed offenses. I don't know. How do we do this? How do we make this work?
I think it's actually crazy. Like, I think that the prices make it kind of hard for me to envision that being the winning game stack. The prices
it's like
too are just
pricey. It's like,
yeah. It's like
Cup is like $10,000 on DraftKings or whatever.
That's actually a great analogy. Like on DraftKings, if your game stack included a $10,000 Cooper Cup and a $7,700 Keenan Allen and an $8,000 Justin Herbert, that would be like a pretty fucking thin tournament team.
Yeah. And that's kind of what we're building here.
Yeah, it's exactly what we're building. Yeah. Yeah. No, that is 100% correct. What is your favorite secondary game stack? Like everyone knows, like Broncos, Chiefs, Raiders, 49ers, you know, that include lots of expensive players. But what's some of the secondary ones you're into?
Broncos, Chiefs is a secondary one. You know, you don't have to go.
It's like cheating. It's insane.
Yeah, like it's actually so hard for me to like not tack that one on when you're kind of like perusing. You're like, what should I do here? you can almost always be like, well, there's a Chief or a Bronco nearby. And then, you know, the guys you tack on late.
Yep.
So that one I really like. One I've been trying to set up more is the Lions Bears. Cause if you get like, especially if I get like a Swift early, then
you can
set up for Fields later.
That one's great too, because the quarterbacks come late, which is nice. And then you have Shark and Pringle who are like really late that you can round it off with.
Yeah, that one works out really well. I'm trying to think. I don't love the Dolphins Pats kind of like, I tend to like get set up for, and then I don't do it. One I did recently, this was super gross, but I kind of actually liked it, as I did Jaguars Texans. And I think I got
so that like, one's Mechie, that one's interesting. That one's pretty interesting, because the Who Cares Bowl of these games where both teams are completely eliminated, it could just go in any way, right? Like, yeah. Like the Who Cares game can just be like two teams who have nothing to play for, just chucking it around the yard, just having a grand old time. Like, I can see that. Yeah. Mechie is this year's Amon-Ra St. Brown. Like, he goes for like his best game of the season, like 9 for 160 and 1, you know?
Yeah, totally. I mean, and Cooks has dealt with injuries throughout his career. Like, you know, maybe he's just like a target hog to close the year. Mills kind of that perfect quarterback who's like, he's not that good, but he's like,
I literally don't think I've taken Mills once.
I don't think I've taken him either, but that's kind of like that point of like, why are you taking Mills? Like, stack the game without Mills and have like, if you have Kyler Murray, you know, or Lamar Jackson or whatever, like Mills, that game can be fun and go off, and you still probably want your rusher there. Yeah, so that one's pretty fun. And then on the Jacksonville side, you can always tack on Visca, you know.
Can always tack on Visca or Zay Jones.
I can't do Zay.
Who was touting Zay Jones? Was it Hayden or Byron?
I don't know. I mean, maybe it was Byron Four. Zay is just like, he's just Jalen Guyton to me.
Yeah. Yeah, he's not interesting to me in any way. Jameson Williams not going to be ready for training camp while we're talking about these. That is, I was kind of, you know, hoping, like holding out hope for the, you know, the miracle recovery from him or whatever, but does not look like that's happening.
No, I've been somewhat bearish on that. I mean, he tore his ACL in January. Like, he's going to play his entire rookie season less than a year removed from an ACL tear. Like,
yeah,
it's not ideal. I do take him occasionally, but like, I guess I felt like that has not been properly priced in my opinion. So I've been trying to get some exposure, because obviously you don't need him to be healthy for the full year. You need him to be healthy for the end of the year. And he's so explosive that, you know, he could pay off.
And as the price decreases, your need to get regular season points from him decreases, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Are there any, what are your secondary stacks you're looking at?
You know, I actually have kind of started to do New England, Miami, because it's even without Tyreek or Waddle, obviously you would prefer to have one of those guys, but like Gesicki, Tua, which you can do on the turn. And then you have an infinite menu of Patriots options, right? So you could start it with Damian or Ramondre, but then, I mean, they literally have six wide receivers with an ADP. Hunter Henry with an ADP, and then James White with your last pick, and then Mac Jones is dirt free too. Now I don't ever go into a draft aiming to do this. Like, I'm never like starring Dolphins and Patriots players, but you can get like round 10 on, you could get like four or five players from that game.
And Mac Jones is one of those guys that you can tack on with like your 17th round pick. Like,
what we were talking about earlier.
Yeah. And I feel better about him than Davis Mills, which maybe he's wrong. I don't know, but he at least like showed some really strong accuracy last year. You can maybe see him like kind of like developing into a semi-startable option. Yeah, that one, I feel like I'm often set up to do it. And I'd tack on extra guys to game sacks I already have rather than leaning into it. But I have drafted Bourne, you know, I think Bourne's so cheap. He's
Myers is the one who's pretty interesting to me.
Yeah, Myers is well-priced. He's not near, like, Bourne's free, but.
You know, Myers has been so good for so long. He just hasn't had the touchdown production. But if he just ran into a little bit of positive variance, I mean, that would be so big for him.
No, I agree. And I do wonder, like, who's coming for Myers' routes, right? Because you have Parker, Aguilar, Thornton, and Bourne.
It would be Bourne would have to be the guy who would be playing over him
in the slot. I don't think that happens. I think Myers is.
I think Myers is the one who seems the most safe, but the market is treating them all like the market is kind of treating them all like they are Chiefs players, where they're just totally throwing up their hands and there's no certainty. Right. But Myers is, I think you can feel pretty certain about Myers' role.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that.
Yeah. What are you working on right now?
Well, I've been working on this this quarterback stuff, and kind of like, I don't know exactly how I'm gonna pace it out in terms of the number of articles and everything, but I've been digging into kind of quarterback selections for best ball and for tournament best ball specifically, and looking at some of these different structures that we're trying to attack. You know, some of the DraftKings tournaments are so different in terms of like what the final week looks like compared to underdog. And just digging into like elite quarterback, viability of elite quarterback, quarterback three builds, all that stuff. So that's what I'm in the weeds on now. I'm not sure what ultimately that's going to lead to.
Yeah, what's your early lean? What are your thoughts on that?
My early lean is that I think one elite quarterback is like almost a necessity, in the sense of like, you know, you have to get through these two small field DFS tournaments in week 15 and 16. And just looking at the last 2 years of FanDuel, you know, you're seeing those elite quarterbacks hit the optimal FanDuel lineup so often. Now that could be a blip, because that wasn't the elite quarterbacks weren't really as powerful in the 4 years before that. So, you know, maybe it's just like, you know, there's been some luck to that, or, you know, we've had a few guys that have really gone off, and it's changing our perception of the position. But like, I lean that no, in fact, there is a shift at the position. We have these new crop of quarterbacks who are in their prime, who run and throw and are super, super talented and are kind of just designed to smash our quarterback scoring. So if you believe that, then I think if you were going to be building like a week 15 DFS lineup today, you would prefer for a small field tournament to have an elite quarterback in there. Same for week 16, same for week 17. I think if you do like two though, right? Like one thing that I think is that you probably have a better chance of advancing to week 17 if you were to go like two elite quarterbacks, because you have a chance of getting one of those guys going off, and it's a small enough field tournament. You only need to finish second, top two of 18, and then one of 18, that if you have two guys, like your odds of getting that type of score is probably higher.
That makes sense.
But then you're probably dust for week 17 with the size of the Best Ball Mania final week.
And just because you would have to, and I mean, I guess it's true that you kind of have to hit on the guy you absolutely have to win, and you have 18, but I guess the odds that the guy you have is like around 3 to 5 pick feels pretty high. Like that, like this year's Cooper Kupp, this year's Fournette, this year's Jamar Chase, whoever, like it feels so likely that it's coming from those rounds. Right. So that's like, you know, James Conner, Hollywood Brown, Travis Etienne, DK Metcalf, isn't Gabe Davis just this year's Cooper Kupp? Like, isn't he really?
I got to hang out with Leone this past weekend for the first time, never met him in person. And we each put down $100 on Gabe Davis to lead the league in receiving yards.
That, I mean, I'm with it. I think he is Chris Godwin. They don't play the same or anything, but I just think he sets up to be like, obviously talented player, heavy passing offense, plays with a clear wide receiver one, but the roles behind him are not very defined. Like if he doubles up Dawson Knox in targets, I'm not going to be surprised by that.
Yeah. I completely agree. I don't think very highly of Dawson Knox. So yeah. And I mean, like Jameson Crowder, I think will probably ultimately lead them in slot snaps, but you know, McKenzie will get some stuff, but like Crowder is, kind of perfect if you want Gabe Davis to go off, because he is also like a, he's a professional wide receiver who like needs to be somewhat respected, but by the defense, I mean, but you know, if Gabe Davis is having a breakout season, Crowder's not going to interrupt that either. So he's in really like a very, it's just feels like such fertile ground for a breakup. But yeah, I mean, if you take, so let's say you take a second quarterback over a Gabe Davis, you know, you just have such a less of a ceiling in the final week, which I think you really, really do need ceiling in that final week. But one thing I was thinking, talking about like punting quarterback two, like if you have an elite quarterback and then punting that quarterback two and maybe going against the idea, Rotovis has the idea of the quarterback window, getting two in the window, which I think very clearly years and years show that that is a great way to win in traditional best ball leagues, but maybe like not a high upside enough approach for these single week tournaments. So that's kind of where my current head's at. But also some of these tournaments, like I said, on DraftKings, like DraftKings has tournaments that have like 11 man finals, you know, or like 20 man final. I think
they have some single entries out there.
Yeah. So like if you're in a 20 man week 17, like you should probably play that different than like a 400 plus week 17. Right. So that's where I'm thinking like, maybe I could actually go like double elite quarterback in those really small week 17 stuff. So anyway, that's where my head's at on all this stuff. And I'm still digging in.
All right, there we go. Everyone, Pat Corain, NBC Sports Edge, listen to a good football show. And we'll be back later in the week.